Hello, podcast listeners. This episode you're about to listen to is from the 2022 Be More Digital Conference. If you like what you hear, why not join us at the 2023 conference? It is going to be held on the 9th of March 2023 at the Novotel London West Hotel. We would just love to see you there. Visit charitydigital.org.uk for more information on all things digital. Enjoy.
Hi everyone, a warm welcome to our session today. We'll be discussing why the shift to online giving means data management is more important than ever for charities. Just to give you a quick look at what we aim to cover today, we have this agenda. And as I said before in our session today, we'll be discussing why data is so important now more than ever to charities. We'll be looking at concerns charities have surrounding this topic, your supporters' concerns, and also what charities could be doing to ensure best practice when it comes to the handling of data. So my name is Pascal Tiso. I'm the head of data at Enthuse. Enthuse is a fundraising, donations and events registration technology provider that has helped thousands of charities raise millions. Enthuse's solutions are customized under a cause's own brand and put the organization in control of the data. This allows charities to build and nurture a loyal supporter base, raise more, and ultimately have more impact. Enthuse was founded in 2012 and has operations in London, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and the Republic of Ireland. And today I'm delighted to introduce Angela Richmond, founder of Red Fox Research, who's worked closely with Enthuse over the last few years. Angela, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm Angela, and I founded Red Fox Research. We're an independent market research agency, and we do research in really anything in the digital world. So we talk to employees, we talk to citizens, we talk to businesses and charities, but it's generally around tech type issues. We work with Enthuse on the Donor Pulse survey, and it's a quarterly survey of just over 2,000 UK citizens, so about 8,000 a year. And it started at the beginning of the pandemic to understand how the pandemic was impacting giving to charities and to fundraising specifically. It's kind of evolved a little bit since then, so we still track how many people are giving, we still track sentiment towards giving. But we've moved on really to look at some more current issues. So in the most recent edition of Donor Pulse, we've been looking more at the impact of the cost of living, or the cost of giving as we refer to it.
Thanks, Angela. As I'm sure you're all aware, there has been a massive shift to digital in many aspects of life, and it's fair to say the pandemic acted as a catalyst for this. At Enthuse, we saw more than ever charities raising much-needed funds online. In our research, we can see that online giving has now become the preferred method over other modes of giving, and surprisingly, particularly in older demographics, which we'll be discussing later in the session. So, Angela, Enthuse, we've been tracking the rise in online giving over the last 2 years. Can you tell us a little bit more about this and the trends we're able to identify in our Donor Pulse research?
Yeah, well, what we're looking at here is the number of people that give in any three-month period and the number of people that have made a donation online. So the paler bars that you can see there is just the number of people that have made a donation. The orange bars are the people that have made an online donation in that three-month period. Now, I think the first thing that you kind of see from the data is that there is a seasonal pattern that you'd expect to see. So when we do our spring research, which captures the Christmas period, we always see a peak then in the number of people that give to charity. But I think what's been interesting is that as we've kind of tracked over the 2 years, we've also seen a general upward trend in the number of people that give to charity. Now, you know, clearly we can see that people are strapped for cash at the moment, so you might think that that's a surprising finding, but you know, remember that there are other things that motivate people to give to charity as well. Some of it's around whether they perceive a need to be there, and you know, I think you would say at the moment that there is plenty of need from people for charity. And the other thing is whether they have an opportunity. So what's happened over the last year is that people have gone back into the workplace, and that's provided more opportunities to give. They're out and about more. It's provided more opportunities to give. So that's the sort of general pattern of giving. When we look at online, we've also seen a shift to online. Now, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, that was out of necessity. A lot of things moved online. Some of those are starting to retrench a little bit now, but actually when it comes to giving, we still see that there's a lot of enthusiasm for donating online. Cash has come back for sure, but it isn't kind of knocking online giving out of the park. It's just an alternative. We also look at the preference for different modes of giving, and actually I think that's more telling, because we are seeing that more people prefer to give online when we ask them what's their preferred way of giving. And actually recently the preference for online has overtaken cash. Cash is still kind of up there, you know, I think it is still very popular. But I think what's also been interesting is that trend towards the adoption of online, we've also seen in older generations that have traditionally been a bit more reluctant to use online. And again, you know, in the most recent editions of Donor Pulse, we've seen that online giving is very popular. And not just compared to cash, it's actually considerably more popular than traditional banking methods, so giving by direct debit, giving by check, which is really, really tiny actually now, the number of even older people that say that they would like to give by check. And what's really happening is that as more older people are embracing online banking, I think that it's easier if they're going to go online to make a donation direct to charity than to go online into their bank account and set up a direct payment or set up a direct debit. So they're starting to have a more direct relationship with the charities than setting up a banking account. Mm.
So with strict GDPR rules that have come into effect over the last few years, it's so important to handle your supporters' data correctly and safely. But before we discuss how to ensure your charity is responsible and compliant when handling your supporters' data, it's important to identify their main concerns. So with this in mind, Angela, can you tell us what are the main concerns surrounding data of donors that we've identified in our research?
Yeah, well, one of the things we ask about is whether people tend to opt out of marketing consent. And you know, there's relatively high numbers of people that just as a course of habit just don't opt into marketing consent. And when you look at the reasons why that is, it really falls into two main themes. The first is around concerns that they are going to be asked for more money. So, you know, that really comes under the category of marketing concerns. So just that the charity will use their data to ask for more money, to send emails that they're not particularly interested in, those sort of things. The second group of reasons is a little bit more complex, and that's around data concerns. And that really kind of breaks down into, first of all, concerns that the charity might lose their data, you know, so things to do with data privacy, things to do with data breach. But probably more important than that, that the charity will use their data in a way that they don't approve of or are comfortable with. So this is how the charities knowingly use their data rather than unintentionally might lose their data.
Mm. And how do these concerns differ when we break them into different age categories?
Yeah, well, they are quite markedly different, actually. Under 40s, who are, you know, maybe a bit more data savvy, they're more concerned around the privacy issues. They're more concerned about how their data will be used, whether it's out there in the public domain. So I think, you know, for you people, what that says is that when you're communicating with those younger age groups and asking for marketing consent, you need to be giving assurances about how you'll use the data and how you'll keep it safe. When we look at the older age groups, who, by the way, are a lot more likely to opt out of marketing consent, their concern really is about being asked for more money and being sent emails that they don't really want to engage with. So I think the thing to take away from that is not to be too heavy-handed with those age groups. You know, you may have a contact that you believe is likely to be quite valuable to you, but you do need to take quite a you know, a soft approach in asking for more money, and you know, thanking them for the money they've given you already, you know, is very important with those age groups.
So with these concerns in mind, it might be a good idea to have a quick refresh about best practices when it comes to data management for your charity. So under the Data Protection Act, you must only collect information when you need it for a specific reason, keep it private and secure, only hold as much information as you need, keep it for only as long as you need it, allow the subject of the data to see it whenever requested, and manage right to be forgotten requests. So if we talk a little bit about best practice now, one of the key things is let people know the reason why you're collecting their data. Maintain and make public your data collection and retention policies. Training. Everyone who handles your data in your organization should be aware of your data policies and GDPR. Part of this should be awareness of strategies to minimize the risk of misuse and breach. And just as important is to have an internal process in the event of a suspected data breach. Don't pass data around the organization using email, particularly if you use a cloud-based email provider like Google Mail or Webmail. Data will pass over the public internet and can be intercepted by a determined bad actor. Passing data via email also carries the risk of error, accidentally sending it to the wrong person. Autofill is the devil of the harassed staff member in a rush. If you do pass data in this way, make sure the file is at least password protected. Best methods are to sort of store it in a shared location, local drives, or cloud-provided storage where access and security can be controlled. And then share the link to the original document. Secure your data. Always ask yourself, who can access it? How do they access it? Do you have laptops? If so, think about what if they're lost or stolen? How secure are they? Can they be wiped remotely in the event of a problem? Are you on-premise or in the cloud or a mixture of both? Do you have a CRM tool? Is it hosted, run in the cloud or locally in your office? This matters, as in some ways it tends to be more secure if you are on-premise in these situations, as it generally requires physical access to the equipment it's installed on. If it's in the cloud, then potentially anyone with access to the internet could get to it. And with this in mind, it's always really important to have strong password policies. Does your system allow you to enforce this along with forced regular changing of passwords? And of course, best practice is not to have names of partners, favorite football teams, or bands, or superheroes. Always think about two-factor authentication if that's an option for you. It's always a good idea to think how you onboard and offboard people, your staff. How do you ensure only the people you want and need to see your data can? Do you have data access logs? Do you audit them? Do you think about disaster recovery? What if you were to lose your data? Do you have backups? Where are they stored, and are your backups themselves stored safely and securely or encrypted? And perhaps one that often gets overlooked is, does anyone actually test your backups? And then do you have a process for securely disposing of or deleting data you no longer need? So as I'm sure we're all aware, data has become a topic that sits at the forefront of many of those working in the third sector. We've discussed the main concerns donors have surrounding data, but what about charities themselves? It's understandable that many charities, especially with those who have little experience or expertise in handling data, might find it daunting. As well as our Donor Pulse research study, we also released our first Charity Pulse study, which looked at insights coming from those working in the sector and in particular explored charities' digital strategy concerns. You'll all have a copy of Charity Pulse in your delegate bag, so please give it a read. So Angela, based on our Charity Pulse study, what can you tell us about the concerns about data that were expressed by those working in the charity sector?
Yeah, well, the Charity Pulse study is a survey of over 200 charities, and it ranges from small charities right up to the super large charities. So it's a good mix of decision makers and influencers within charities. And we look at a number of things. We looked at optimism for the future. We've looked at how people are evolving their fundraising and whether they're going into a virtual fundraising mode. But we also looked at the sort of state of technology. And I think this kind of links to some of the stats that were shared in the very first session, where I think it was mentioned that 40% of charities didn't really have a digital strategy. So one of the things that we ask about is what are the main concerns when it comes to their digital strategy and their digital approach? And actually, the number one concern amongst charities is around data privacy and GDPR, which was voted for by 62% of the charities as a significant concern. Now, that's actually quite surprising when you think about it. You know, going back 4 years when the GDPR regulations came in, we were doing lots and lots of research around this, and everybody was treating it as though it was a kind of big bang thing that, you know, are we ready for GDPR? And I don't think anybody realised that it was going to be something that was going to hang around us for so long. And I think what people are coming to realise is that GDPR and data privacy is a kind of living, moving thing, because the regulations may be there and set in stone, but how you interpret them in different situations can vary. You know, so when COVID comes along, something that may not have been legitimate interest yesterday suddenly is legitimate interest. So I think one of the things that charities seem to be grappling with is how to interpret the legislation and the compliance, in what they are doing. So every time something comes along, every time they're trying to think about, can we do this campaign? Can we pivot to do a virtual fundraiser? They're kind of stopping and going back to the regulations and saying, is it compliant? So there's still quite a lot of work to do, I think, there. The second area, and a lesser area actually, was around data breach. So 45% of charities said data breach was an area that they were concerned about. Actually, when you look at the different sizes of charities, data breach is a bigger concern for larger charities. Smaller charities tend to think less about it. I think with larger charities, they've got more to lose. They're likely to be targeted because of the name. They do have a lot more concerns there. So, I mean, you kind of went through quite a long list of different things that charities could do there. Just kind of with that in mind, what would you sort of summarise as some of the main things that people could be thinking about?
So I think one of the problems with data breach specifically, and it's something that it's not just charities that are worried about, it's all professional organisations that deal with data. It's a concern for all of us. And I think the two main problems, or the two main risks I fear, I think, are both reputational and compliance. Now, there's not much I can say about reducing reputational risk other than to follow the best practices that we talked about as best you can in order to prevent a breach in the first place. But I think where you can mitigate risk is on the compliance side. And in the event of a serious breach, one of the things that the regulator will want to see is what processes did you have in place to deal with the breach once it had occurred. And here I think it helps to have your reactive processes clearly documented. This includes a list of key internal decision makers that need to be informed in the event, and who do you need in a room to assess the extent of the breach and whether the ICO need to be told. People, this could include people like your DPO, your data protection officer, your CEO, members of your trustees board need to be there. And of course, time here is a major factor. If you can clearly demonstrate that all of this was documented clearly and then the processes were followed precisely, then you can be confident that you responded in the best possible way. So, Angela, does the research tell us anything else about the concerns that charities have specifically about data breaches?
Well, I mean, it might be useful to sort of share that in a broader context of charities versus other sectors. And there's quite a lot of research out there that the government's done, that people like the National Cybersecurity Centre have done. If you want to see any of that, there's a blog on redfoxres.com. But, you know, there's two things really that you notice if you look at how charities compare to business and commercial sectors. The first is that charities are actually being targeted more. And there's a report from the National Cybersecurity Centre that highlights the level of trust in the sector actually being a problem. And one of the things they say is the outward-facing nature of charities and a culture of trust in the sector makes them particularly vulnerable to criminality. And what they're talking about there is not just trust from donors, but trust amongst your own employees. So they highlighted that phishing scams, just general email coming in can be an issue in that it can have malware attached to it, it can have viruses attached to it, and that this is coming through on charities more than it is in the private sector. So, you know, that's clearly an issue. But I think also there's data out there that suggests that charities have poorer defences generally than the private sector. Now, some of that's to do with resources, some of that's to do with how charities manage their work. Clearly, you've got more volunteers working for you. But, you know, a couple of the things that have come out in some of the government research is that there's a greater prevalence of BYOD, bring your own device, amongst charities in the private sector. So you're expecting people to use their own phone, laptop, whatever. That's an area of vulnerability. Before the COVID crisis even, there were a lot more people working in charities who work from home. You know, again, that creates vulnerabilities. So, you know, there is more going on there that creates poorer defence. And that's actually played out in the incidence of cybercrime. So any data breaches have to be reported to the ICO. And what you see there is that charities, you know, they're generally on a par with businesses until you start looking at the larger charities. And then actually the number of charities reporting data breach is much higher. You know, and I think it's because they're being targeted to some extent. It's because it's, you know, the donors are there and maybe more willing to believe some of these phishing scams. But, you know, that's clearly an issue. And the other thing, really, when you look at that data, I've done some comparisons of year on year. And while in the private sector, the number of reports of data breaches going down, it isn't for charities, so you've still got quite a lot of work to do here. But I guess I want to finish on a slightly more positive note in that it can get quite scary to think about all of these stats. And I think the concern sometimes is that it can stop charities in their tracks. You know, you have work to do. You have to go and get income from different places. And one of the things that concerns me is that when we go out and we do qualitative research with charities and we talk to charities, we see two quite different mindsets. We see typically smaller charities who are very agile, can get a campaign out there really, really quickly, but frankly aren't giving the headspace to data privacy and data breach that they should be. And larger charities that just seem to take months and months and months to be able to do anything, and the fundraising staff in particular are really frustrated by this because the data security protocols and processes that they have in their organisation is really just stopping them from doing anything. You know, and at the end of the day, the aims of your organisation are to help people and to raise money. You know, you have to take a pragmatic view. So I don't think there's a right and wrong answer to it. But in the commercial sector, I think people are starting to realise that they've got to interpret it in a way that they can still run their businesses. And to some extent, I think charities, you have to do the same.
So now we've discussed best practice when it comes to data and what the main concerns charities have regarding this. What can these mean for your charity, and how can your organisation benefit from excellent data management? Well, with the pandemic and lockdowns, it's been harder to directly engage with supporters, especially keeping them involved by being face to face with them. Because of this, making sure that you are kept on their radar for the foreseeable future, it's important that you are able to contact them digitally through data that is, of course, being collected in guidance with GDPR. So with this data, you can send out personalised, well-targeted emails to keep your supporters engaged. One of the fantastic charities that Enthuse has the privilege to work with is Muslim Charity. In January 2021, Muslim Charity was keen to trial virtual fundraising events for the first time. Virtual events are a great way to engage with supporters, help keep them fit and raise important funds, which was a priority for Muslim Charity going into the event. Enthuse's branded virtual event solution was the perfect fit for the winter appeal that Muslim Charity wanted to put on, which was the 30 miles in 30 days virtual run challenge. Access to data was really important for the charity so they could continue to nurture supporter relationships rather than have one-off transactional interactions. It was vital to work with a partner that provided full transparency and access to supporter data for future campaigns. This campaign helped the charity see long-term supporter relationships open up. 11% of supporters opted into Muslim Charity's marketing communications over the course of the month, double the amount they'd seen for sign-ups on other platforms during the same time period. 65% of those registrants also provided their postal addresses versus just 6% on other platforms in their A/B test. And an additional 17% of donors provided their phone numbers, giving the charity multiple ways to keep in touch with supporters in the future, both offline and online. And of course, all of the data was accessible, fully transparent to the charity, and managed securely by Enthuse, which is GDPR compliant and never retargets donors with communications for other campaigns. So we hope you found our session informative. We'd love to wrap up now with a few key learnings that we've had from the changes in the charity sector and that have come in the wake of the pandemic. And most importantly, how we can use these going forward into the future of fundraising. The future of charity giving is going to remain online. The pandemic triggered a shift towards online giving, and it's now seen as the preferred method. And what's important is how you engage with different age groups to benefit from this. Speaking of different age demographics, it's important to be aware of their different concerns when it comes to data. Over 40s, concerned more about being asked for further donations and their information being kept, whilst under 40s, more worried about breaches and how their data is used. Making sure your charity is data compliant is essential. Be sure to keep all staff up to date and aware of best practice. This is important more than ever, considering data privacy and GDPR are the two most prevalent data concerns. When using this best practice, you can use this data to send out personalized, well-targeted emails to keep your supporters engaged. So that's it from us today. Thank you so much for your attention. A big thank you to Angela for joining me today and sharing the research, and big thanks to Charity Digital for hosting us today.
Thank you very much. And we're going to take a few questions. But yes, please. That was fascinating. My head is buzzing from all these numbers, but they're very, very helpful. And this is, I'm buzzing. This is such a critical area for charities at the moment. So I've got a few questions on our Slido platform. Just wanted to check whether there were any questions in the room before I move on to those. Not yet. We'll give you a chance to warm up. There are a couple of questions. There's something around how do we get less technically savvy charity leaders to invest in these sort of, especially the sort of cybersecurity, compliance, rules, two-factor authentication, thinking about bring your own device, etc. How do we bring those higher up the agenda when it comes to investment?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not too sure I know the good answer to that question. I guess it's about if you can invest, it's investing in the people to do it. I speak very selfishly from that point of view, obviously, being a data professional myself. But I think if you can, it's bring people in-house in order to achieve that. If not, it's working with good third-party providers that can help advise on that, consultants when and where necessary.
I mean, I think I'd probably add to that, working in the private sector quite a bit. One of the issues people have is that when they are going into something new, like setting up new security software and so on, that they just spend far too long thinking about it and not enough time doing it, And I think at the beginning, on the panel discussion, somebody said, be brave. And, you know, at some point you have to make a decision about a vendor, you have to make a decision about what you're going to do about it. It's better to have a solution that wasn't 100% the right solution than none at all, rather than just thinking about it for months and months and months.
Yep. So the other risk is not to do anything.
The risk is not to do anything. And, you know, the fines can be huge. So, yeah. You know, I think that probably should focus the minds of trustees.
Yeah. Yes. We have a question around cookie tracking and the new limitations around what you can do around on cookie tracking, a reject all button, no dark patterns. And first of all, what do you think the impact is going to be? And secondly, is there anything charities should be thinking about doing in this context?
Do you want me to grab that one quickly? I mean, with regards to cookie tracking, yeah, there's a lot of rumours about the changes, upcoming changes that are going to be making at the moment. The only thing I would suggest is that if you've got development underway at the moment, you might want to pause on that and just make sure you're covered by what is currently in place. And then, yeah, I would probably wait and to see what develops on that front for now.
I mean, again, I just sort of draw on research I'm doing with other clients and say that I'd focus on what's going on with your first party data. You know, if cookies are going, and they will go, you know, they may come back in some other guise, there's still a lot of businesses out there that still haven't got a grip on their first party data. So in other words, can you have a direct conversation with the people that have interacted with you? So it's all about getting that marketing consent so you know how you can deal with those people, you know, because you may not be able to rely on cookies in the future.
Yeah.
Any question in the room?
Was there any research around mobile donations or what devices do people be using to?
Yes, there is actually. I think one of the things that caught my eye was we're starting to pick up quite a bit of preference for contactless. You know, which is obviously going to displace cash. And so, you know, there's a lot more acceptance and interest in using contactless. And I think that, you know, if you're out there, out and about in the street, or even if you've got people that are coming into your premises that you want to get donations for, people are going to be very open to that. And, you know, it clearly gives you more of an opportunity for suggesting a donation rather than just leaving them to put in whatever spare change they've got. So yeah, I think that's important. You know, in terms of giving online donations, I think people are doing that on a mobile platform a lot of the time, but I think it, you know, we haven't really picked up how the behaviour is different yet.
I have a question, actually. If you say you want to change what you use the data for, do you have any best practice in terms of how to communicate that to your user base?
So you really want to be getting opt-ins rather than opt-outs. It is quite difficult to change data use. You know, my advice would be to think quite carefully about what you want to ask of people the first time that you get to them, because if you go back to people, it generally gives them an excuse to say I'm opting out rather than I'm changing my use. So, you know, I would think my first bite of the cherry is the most important one.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast and found this content helpful and want to attend the 2023 conference, you can register your interest on the website today.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.